This is Edward Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our program today is entitled Workforce Equity, How Corporate Chicago Can Lead the Way. Our panelists include Monica Turnbull from the Health Care Service Corporation, Tina Sanders from Phalanx Family Services, and Marie Zupek-Lynch, Skills for Chicagoland's Future. Our moderator today will be City Club Board Member Anne St. Germain, and we welcome you to today's program, Workforce Equity, Corporate Chicago Can Lead the Way.
Today we have a very interesting and timely program to offer. Workforce Equity, Corporate Chicago Can Lead the Way. Let me introduce you to our panelists today. Monica Turnbull. Monica is Divisional Senior Vice President of Workforce Talent and Business Engagement for Healthcare Service Corporation, which operates the Blue Cross and Blue Shield plans in Illinois, Montana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. This is an independent licensee of Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. In her role, Monica leads the strategy and processes related to building and retaining a high-performing workforce. Monica is an active member of the Chicago community as well. She's a member of several boards and councils, most notably the Girl Scouts of Greater Chicago and Northwest Indiana, and the Blue Cross Blue Shield Institute and Matter Chicago. She is also a 2015 Leadership Greater Chicago Fellow and serves on that organization's board of directors. She was named in 2016 among the most powerful and influential women in Illinois, Illinois Diversity Council. Next, we have Tina Sanders. Tina has served the public for about as long as she can remember. She had an early career at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago, and she's been an advocate for young people, early childhood through college, all the time. During her tenure at the club, she experienced all aspects of club life, engaging with the early childhood program, managed the growth of the Workforce Development Initiative, the state-funded Teen Reach programs, and 21st Century programs. She founded Phalanx Family Services, also called Phalanx, on the west side of Chicago. She opened a second location on the far south side of Chicago, and after several years of managing two locations, Tina made the difficult decision to close the west side location and focus all the workforce efforts on the south side, which primarily serves the Roseland, Pullman, and Washington Heights communities. To date, Phalanx has placed more than 20,000 individuals in subsidized and unsubsidized jobs and serves more than 1,800 job seekers annually. Our final panelist is Marie Trupek-Lynch. Marie is the founding president and CEO of Skills for Chicagoland's Future. Skills, a nonprofit, creates demand-driven solutions for employers to get the unemployed and underemployed residents back to work throughout Chicagoland. Marie was a member of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's Business, Economic, and Neighborhood Development Transition Committee, and also supported Governor Pritzker's transition into his office as a member of the Job Creation and Economic Opportunity Transition Committee. Previously, Marie, as founding president of Chicago Career Tech, a career retraining initiative for the unemployed in emerging and middle-income Chicagoans, she also spent 8 years working for the YMCA in the roles of Executive Vice President of Human Services and Housing. Marie also served on the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship for the U.S. Department of Commerce. Welcome all to our panelists today. All right, so the format, we're going to give each of you 3 to 4 minutes to make some remarks, and then we'll go to questions and answers, some of which we received in advance online and some of which we'll be taking live during the program. Marie, would you like to start?
Yeah, great. Well, thank you to the City Club for having us, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Tina and Monica as experts in the field. You know, I'm really excited to be talking about this topic as this is one of the most important things, you know, facing our country right now. I want to start by just sharing some facts in terms of some numbers to maybe frame part of the conversation today. As many of you know, the Black and Brown community was significantly impacted by COVID. From a health perspective, you know, African American Latinx community members were 3 times as likely to be hospitalized and 2 times as likely to die from COVID. From a jobs and employment perspective, as you know, as many of you may or may not know, McKinsey actually had done an analysis and found that 45% of Black private sector workers were working in 3 industries that were most affected by COVID layoffs, healthcare, retail, and food service. Finally, if you look at the unemployment rate, again, just painting some context here for everybody, while the national unemployment rate is 6.1%, the African-American unemployment rate is 9.7%, Latino is 7.9%, and the white unemployment rate is 5.3%. So numbers don't lie and certainly tell a story here, which is why it's so important to have inclusive recovery. I also think it's important to talk a little bit about, you know, as we're coming out of this, out of COVID, you know, folks have talked a lot about, you know, how they wish things could go back to where they were. I'm not sure I'm on that, you know, that train, to be honest, because when I look back to what unemployment rate was for our African-American population in 2019, it was 9.5%. So I'm not sure that's a train that we need to be back on. And I think certainly this is a movement and a time where we can actually, hopefully come out stronger. So I just want to kind of frame some things kind of moving forward. I think, you know, with everything that has occurred over the last year, including, you know, the George Floyd movement along with COVID, I think our employers have really stepped up and started to recognize the importance of doing things differently. And we've seen a level of commitment that I've not seen in the last 10 years. Blue Cross Blue Shield is certainly a leader in that. Discover has been a leader in that. We'll talk about that a little bit later today. But certainly companies are looking at not just hiring from our neighborhoods, which have extraordinary talent, but also locating in those neighborhoods. And I'm not going to steal Monica's thunder on that. So I will conclude with that. But I'm looking forward to talking more about that as we have this conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie, for those comments. Next, we'd like to hear from Monica.
Yes. Thank you, Marie. You know, so I would not hear the end of it from Marie if I did not call out that I And I knew you were waiting for this, Marie. Anne-Marie shared a little bit about my bio and some of the boards that I serve on. And an additional board that I serve on is Marie's board, the Skills for Chicagoland's Future, and proudly serving that board. It's a phenomenal board. And I know we'll get into some more about what exactly Skills does and the tremendous impact that they've had on the community. And we're such a proud partner with them on and all of their efforts. And so I just had to get that in there for you, Marie. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about as we open it up is how an example of how we've worked with Marie and her team there at Skills for Chicagoland's Future. And that's with regards to our Morgan Park facility. And I just have a few slides that I'm going to show and click through here. In case anyone on the phone is not, or on the web, excuse me, is not familiar with our Morgan Park facility. So you can see there on the screen, it's located at 11840 South Marshfield Avenue. And just a little bit of a background around our Morgan Park facility about how it came to be and why, you know, we've had this commitment to going in and investing deeply into the community. So this facility was the brainchild of our president and CEO, Maurice Smith. This had been a long-standing vision of his, and he turned that vision into reality. And so we made this commitment in the Morgan Park community because as an organization, we've been in the community for 80-plus years. It's key to who we are as an organization. We're a purpose-driven organization, and a significant part of that purpose is being in the community in a meaningful way. And so we really believe that the power of community and how collective action and working with the community can drive long-term meaningful change for our members and our employees, right? Because our employees live and work in the communities that we support. So we really believe that creating opportunities and making intentional investments in the local neighborhoods, such as jobs, such as supporting local businesses and increased access to health and well-being is what makes us stronger as an organization, quite frankly, and what makes us stronger, what makes our community stronger. And this is how we get back into kind of this equitable recovery, as Marie mentioned. And so, Anne-Marie, I don't know if we'll have a chance to come back to. I know we're just kind of doing quick opening statements, but I did want to share some additional information about the Morgan Park facility. If you go to the next slide, we did the groundbreaking in November of 2019. And on this picture, you can see here, Marie Smith is standing what would be to the left of Mayor Lightfoot. So we did this in 2019. The next slide shows a job fair that we did in July of 2020. So you can see there we're all in masks, we're masked up. And what I want to point out about this job fair that we had, again, in partnership with Skills for Chicagoland's Future, we did this job fair 100% externally, outside. Obviously, we were really in the height of the pandemic at that time, but it was a very socially distanced. We had a lot of people come out from the Morgan Park community and surrounding communities. And so, you know, we really wanted to make sure that there was a sense of people being safe, had significant safety precautions that we put in place. But, you know, we really felt it was important during that time when a lot of people were losing their jobs because of the pandemic or couldn't find jobs even prior to the pandemic, that we were giving people jobs, that we were offering people jobs, we were creating jobs for the Morgan Park community and the surrounding communities. And so if you, a little bit of history about the actual site itself, it was an abandoned Target store. And so we converted that into 130,000 square feet of multi-purpose center, which includes a large employee work site. So right now our employees that are in there are mainly a part of our customer service area. We've got about just under 200 jobs that are filled in that facility right now. The plan is to eventually hire a total of 550 jobs that will be located there in future phases of hiring. And so one of the things I do want to point out, in addition to being a service center, the Morgan Park location also features Blue Cross Blue Shield's second Blue Door neighborhood center. And so our first Blue Door neighborhood center was opened in April of 2019 in the Pullman area. And so this really represents for us a new way to partner with the communities where we operate. And a quick plug for our Blue Door neighborhood centers, they offer no-cost programming such as fitness classes, educational classes on chronic health conditions, on stress, on nutrition, on substance abuse, and as well as information on how best to use one's health insurance. And we also offer these services to our Medicaid members, and they can meet with care coordinators to manage their healthcare costs. And of course, as you can imagine, all of these offerings are currently offered in a virtual environment, but we're looking forward to opening these offices soon. So if you're not familiar with the Morgan Park facility or our Blue Door neighborhood facilities, please go on our website and learn more, but wanted to, like I said, open this up and give a real time example of what it means to what we feel invest meaningfully and long-term in the community. So thank you, Anne-Marie.
Can you just real quickly share the website address so folks can go?
Yes, it could be www.hcsc.com or www.bluecrossbcbsil.com.
Thank you. Thank you for that. All right. And finally, we'd like to hear from Tina Sanders. Tina?
Well, good afternoon, and I could thank you for making me a part of this conversation. Monica, I just want to say that we work very closely with Blue Shield Blue Cross, the Blue Door. We've been partnering with them over the past 3 or 4 years. In fact, you were one of the companies that approached Phalanx because we're a community-based organization in the Roseland area and asked us to, you know, hold a mini job fair. So we were able to recruit many, many community residents and do the some customer service trainings and so forth. And you sent your people over to actually interview people. So thank you. And I think that's the trend that you're going to see now. You're going to see companies just like Discover reaching out to community-based organizations to really work hand in hand to really get community residents employed in some of these businesses. So real briefly about Phalanx Family Services, we've been around for over 2 years. We are a workforce development agency that provides our wraparound services for youth and adults. We offer trainings that lead to certifications, state credentials, and job placements. All of our trainings are combined with life skills and job readiness workshops. Our trainings, we do a basic nurses assistance program. We have an 8-week program that people can come through, graduate, and they earn their state credentials, and we place them on jobs. We do food service, security, digital literacy, financial literacy, and we are a reentry center. So we work with people who are returning from prison, and we in turn try to provide them with the life skills, training, and employment they need to get back into the world of work. So in some of our other services for young people, we are a hub for young people in Morgan Park, Roseland area. Under our hub, we provide mentoring. We do juvenile justice programs. We are a summer youth provider. We service about 300 to 400 youth every summer, finding them job placements. And that program is through the city of Chicago. We have year-round subsidized internship programs. We have anti-violence workshops, social-emotional learning workshops. And we also offer emergency services for our residents. We do rental assistance, mortgage assistance, utility assistance, and crisis intervention. Recently, we've been working with Roseland Hospital, being a hub for them, providing COVID testing and the vaccinations. So our push now is really, really to provide education to our community residents, showing them the importance of getting vaccinated. In summing up, I'm glad to be here, and I want to thank Marie for including me on this. Thanks, Marie.
Thank you very much, Tina, for those comments. Before we get to questions, I'd just like to offer a couple of points of information. As you know, City Club of Chicago is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and if you're interested in learning more about City Club, you'd like to become a member, or if you'd like to donate to the cause of keeping public affairs programming like this available to all, please visit cityclub-chicago.org. You can also go to cityclub-chicago.org/membership to join, and you can go to cityclub-chicago.org/donate to support our mission. Thank you all. Let's go to some questions, and we have quite a few. We're going to get through as many as we can in the time we have today. The first one, which is, I think, directed to all of you, from Anya Flores at the University of Chicago Hospital. Have any of you had career changes in terms of the transition of your career path? And how did you transition to the new roles? And what advice would you offer to those who are looking to do the same? Anybody want to kick off?
Well, I will. My career change came about 20 years ago. I retired from Boys and Girls Club after being there 40 years. And while I was there, I had an opportunity to start the workforce development portion of Boys and Girls Club. And that got me really interested in working with adults. I've always worked with young people, and we provide the necessary services and programs to help them, but we'd send them back home to parents who also needed help. So I said, well, we need to look at working with the whole family. So that was a transition for me, leaving Boys and Girls Club and starting my own company to work with adults and really finding out what it is they really need. How do I connect them to the right jobs? How do I connect them to the right services they need to be successful? So for me, that was a career changing event. The transition was fairly smooth. So it made it much easier for me to start my own company. One of the things that really made it easier, I was able to hire most of the staff that worked with me at Boys and Girls Club in the adult division to come with me. So that made it easier. And it was a lot of planning that went into that.
Anne-Marie, I can add, I've been with Healthcare Service Corporation for 15 years. And so while I've not done a lot of, career transitions from company to company or industry to industry, I have done a lot of career transitions within Healthcare Service Corporation. I've been very fortunate to do so and have gone from roles, whether it be on the operations side to in the business to human resources where I sit now. And so one of the things that has been a theme throughout those 15 years as I've made those different transitions was understanding what were the experiences that I was trying to capture in terms of closing the gaps of my knowledge and understanding. You know, one of the things that I tell people within the organization is be a student of your company, be a student of your industry. And so as I've made my transition to different roles in the organization, being very focused and dedicated on learning where I was going or learning more about where I wanted to go and really invested in myself and at appropriate times asked the organization, to invest in me in terms of either personal development or professional development. And so I would say that's how I would answer that question from Anna, is just saying understanding, right? And not feeling that you have to have everything mapped out, but really understanding, are there gaps in knowledge in terms of what you're pursuing and career opportunities and making sure that you're connecting and asking the questions and connecting with people that can help point you in the right direction.
Yeah, and I would just jump in just really quickly, just because I think it pertains to our conversation as well about transferable skills. You know, I've had the opportunity. I had a theme throughout my career. It's been in government, in the private sector, and in not-for-profit. And in each of those segments, it's always been about doing for others. But there's transferable skills, which you take from all of that. And I think, you know, the reason I bring that up is twofold. One, in terms of when I had the opportunity to actually take all those skills, and then with the last recession, to be able to look at what was needed in the city and to be asked to help to found an organization that was addressing unemployment in a very unique way, I was able to bring all those skills together to be able to do that and to found the organization and to really, you know, take all the learnings and think about how do we, you know, put the employer first to be able to actually drive change. I think the other thing is, I would say that's also relevant here is, you know, the transferable skill piece has been really critical in this past year. When everybody lost jobs a year ago, right, there was a big component. What we did at Skills is we were really working with individuals to say, like, what are your skill sets and how can you use them differently? And so I think that's a constant piece of the growth when somebody changes career path.
Thank you. All right. We have a question here from Nicole, and I hope I'm saying this right, Jovicevic. And this ties actually to Mayor Lightfoot's initiative, Invest Southwest. Nicole's question is, how can the community utilize this momentum with new employers hopefully moving into the South and West sides? What can we expect? How can we take advantage of this? And what might you suggest? Anybody?
Well, I'm happy to jump in. So I think a few things. You know, first, I would say in terms of the community is, I think, you know, both in the example of Blue Cross Blue Shield and then Discover, you know, who's located now in Chatham, I think both these companies have also made part of their mandate, not just hiring from the community, but also being a community center and opening up their doors to be able to utilize their facility for the community. So I think certainly any of the community organizations, certainly reach out to Blue Cross, reach out to us, reach out to, Discover. Again, we can help with that as well. But, you know, they want to participate in the neighborhood. So I think that's one piece is to the actual facility. Second is in terms of the jobs, I think both organizations have a real commitment. And by the way, I would add AT&T and JPMorgan Chase also have a number of locations in the communities as well as some other companies. And I think all these, you know, companies are really interested in hiring the talent from the neighborhood. So I think, go directly to the company, go to an organization like Skills. You know, we're helping to place, Phalanx is helping to do placements there. But certainly, you know, I think everybody has a, you know, one of the things I said at the Discover opening was people should have the ability to be able to go to your parent-teacher conference, when those things are back in person again, to be able to go to a soccer game, to be able to be home for dinner and not have, you know, 1.5 hour commute. And so I think, you know, getting those jobs. And then the final piece I would say is if there is not an employer in your community, right, that is attractive, I think you can also reach out to organizations, again, like ourselves and others, so that we can connect you to other types of both pathway programs that can help you get, you know, skilled up, or to actual jobs in other companies, which are very interested in working with individuals. And the final thing I just want to say on this Invest Southwest piece is I think it really has put a spotlight on 10 communities. But I think it's actually having a, you know, a lovely kind of domino effect of like, okay, what are those zip codes around those communities and how, you know, employers are looking at how to have a broader impact.
You know, Marie, I would add to that and say any new companies going into these communities is listen, right? Have focus groups, listening tours, really understand what are the needs of the community, right? And so I think that's, we did that with our Blue Door Neighborhood Centers and with Morgan Park, and making sure that that these organizations are finding ways to have meaningful connections with the community and build true relationships with the community will go a long way. Otherwise, you know, the community won't trust that what you're doing is genuine or well-meaning, right? So it's kind of like the saying, people won't care what you know until they know that you care. Right. So it's not just, it can't be, we go in the community and because it's, you know, kind of the on trend thing to do. It's what is the long-term, you know, playbook in terms of why they're going into the community, the outcomes that they're driving about being into the community and being there for the long term. Right. And so that's the advice that I would give to that question. It's before you kind of put down roots, you know, get into the community, ask the questions, listen, just to be open to hearing and making sure that you're delivering on, you know, what the community needs from large scale organizations entering that space.
I would just echo what Marie and Maneka has said. It's important that the businesses coming in bringing their value to the community, and that the community can trust them. And it's also important that they connect to agencies such as Felix to, you know, have a pulse on the community in terms of what are the needs, what kind of training can we bring into the community to help them get ready for these jobs.
Thank you for that. All right, now we have a couple of themes that are bubbling up here in the questions related to what you all have been talking about. One is the equitable and inclusive recovery, economic and pandemic wise, and the other is reducing barriers to employment, which are very related. So let's take a few of these questions. I'll try to do them one at a time so everyone can comment. One, do employers have a corporate social responsibility to hire from underserved communities? What's the business case for doing so with authenticity and deliberation?
Yeah, I can take that, Anne-Marie. So pardon me, I'm going to share just some data with you, just some numbers. So to answer the first part of your question, yes, right? Simply yes. Corporations have a social responsibility, right? And so one of the things in some of the studies that we looked at, it's no surprise to anyone that is tuning in that this pandemic will leave a legacy of inequitable impact on people, right? So when we look at, you know, from women to racial minorities to low-income population, women's economic security is more at risk as a result of this pandemic. Specifically, 19% of women are at higher risk to lose their job than men. When we talk about racial minorities in the U.S. That face a greater inequity, so 2x percent racial minorities reduction for Black women specifically of employment versus white women, 2x, and that reduction is they face unemployment, I should clarify. And then when it comes to low-income and informal sector workers who are the most impacted, we've seen a 60% decline in income of informal workers just in the first month of the pandemic. So that was the first month, and you know, you can extrapolate that forward as things have continued. You know, and so back to the kind of the piece about social responsibility, you know, people expect what we're seeing from studies like Mercer and Glassdoor, people expect companies to come out of this pandemic being better citizens, being better global citizens. And so one of the surveys that came out was that one in three employees stated that they would prefer to work for an organization that shows responsibility to all stakeholders, both internal to that organization, external, whether it be your direct members and customers, or the community at large. It's four times more likely, as studies have shown, that a thriving employee works for a company that pushes for pay equity and promotion decisions and that there's transparency around that. And then 76% of job seekers said that a diverse workforce was important when evaluating companies and job offers. And I think we're going to continue to see that even more, you know, a hunger and an appetite for job seekers to see a diverse workforce. And so when you ask the question, is there a business case for this? Yes, all of that was meant to, you know, shine the light on what the business case is for that is, but also in terms of, you know, yeah, obviously I'm in the corporate sector, so we think a lot and talk a lot about this war for talent. And the war for talent has really shifted now for a number of reasons as a result of the pandemic. And a big part of that has been location, which is another question. You know, I know you're going to get to that question as well. But for us, as we think about how we're going to address this nuanced dynamic of this war for talent, you know, one thing that all companies should be looking at is having access to larger talent pools, right? So as we think about how we compete for that, for us, it's going to be vitally important that if our to expand that pool and go deep, right? So both the breadth and depth of those relationships, because if our competitors are hiring from HBCUs and Latino-serving colleges and universities and hiring from underserved and underrepresented populations, they will have an advantage, you know, over us, right? So that's where we're really looking at as we move things forward. We have been, but as we continue to move forward, how do we both open that pool, make that pool larger, but go deeper? And part of that going deeper is making sure that we've got the right partners like a Phalanx, like Skills for Chicagoland's Future, to help us understand where that talent is and get you know, ready access to that pool. So I'll pause there. Just wanted to share a little bit of my insight.
I just want to add a couple of things. I think Monica just, I mean, she hit this, you know, beautifully, I think, with all these stats. And I just want to maybe kind of, you know, add these three things. One is, you know, a lot of what she talked about is, you know, number one, employers are demanding it. I mean, employees are demanding it. It is just a critical piece. And she covered that. I think number two is it's good for business. And why I say it's good for business is if you look at the last recession, one of the studies that was done in the last recession was it showed that if somebody had been unemployed, they were more likely to stay and have a higher retention rate at a company than those who had stayed employed. I suspect when this is done, we're going to see the same type of thing. And so, you know, there's an ability to actually reach out and to, again, that's just great. You know, when there's lower retention for a company, it's better for the bottom line. So I suspect we're going to see that again. And then the third piece is, you know, maybe it's not a business case, but I think it should be a business case, which is it's a moral imperative. And what I mean by that in particular is there was this great, article that was written by Brookings recently, which talked about the fact that it really pushed and said, you know, everybody talks about a skills gap. Well, there's also an access gap that's happening here. And it was like, it's actually, and they were actually positioning that it was stronger. And that the reality is, you know, this is something Skills has talked about forever, and we didn't write the article, but it was all about the fact that it's getting access to that job that's so critical, which is why, like, when Monica talks about the different types of reach out they're doing to different types of organizations and colleges and universities to be able to access a different type of talent, it really helps to level the playing field. And I think we have a moral responsibility to do that.
All right. Oh, go ahead, Tina. Please.
It's just a comment. One of the things we do when we try to match our participants with businesses, we sell them on the company in terms of, you know, these are their benefits, this is a salary, you know, the opportunity for you to grow, that's there. So I think that's important, and that's how we operate. And so for those businesses to retain people, I think they have to make sure that their benefit plans, their salaries, that are always the best they can be.
All right. Thanks. Echoing what Marie just said about moral imperative, we have a comment. Community disinvestment and an historic lack of opportunity in Chicago's communities of color have been a persistent problem and led to long-term unemployment and underemployment among Black and Brown Chicagoans, exacerbated by the pandemic. Corporate Chicago has a moral responsibility to do things differently. And keying off of that, let's go to that reducing barriers to employment piece. Question, what advice would you have for Chicago employers who want to hire more people from underserved communities but may not know quite how to go about it?
Call me.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Monica, go.
No, I would say it's easier than you think, right? I think sometimes we make, you know, things seem daunting and big and problems, but they're really not, right? It's about reaching out. It's understanding, you know, who's doing this, right? And connecting with them, it's a common theme that you've heard, right? You've got partners in the community that are ready, willing, and able to help, right? And so, you know, we've got a playbook. You know, again, we're a large corporate organization. We've got a playbook and we're happy to share, and we're happy to sit down and have conversations. And I think in that is something that we need to start doing and getting that out and having, you know, having this, the City Club, you know, put this on, right? And so thank you so much to the City Club of Chicago for putting this on and getting the word out and letting, you know, other organizations know that it's possible. And you've got people here that are willing to help and willing to share that knowledge. And Marie and I have talked about this. How can we, you know, keep doing this? How can we, you know, then maybe the next conversation is pulling Discover in, and we could share about kind of, you know, how that worked with Discover. Marie connected us, Discover and Blue Cross together, and, you know, Discover opened up their site in Chatham. So it's about creating a coalition for this. And once, particularly in the corporate org, in the corporate setting, once people understand there's a way to go about doing it, because at first it can seem so daunting. And I'm not going to say that it's not, it comes with, you know, there are starts and stops to it. There are nuances, right? But if you've got the right focus, you know, I know we'll talk about roadmaps and all of that later, you know, later, and kind of what is the roadmap for this for other companies. But if you've got the right focus behind this, then you can make it happen. It is certainly doable. And, you know, really, I'm really proud to work with this company. Like I said, I've been here for 15 years. There's a lot of reasons I've stayed with this company for 15 years, and what we've been able to do and taking what I would say going to the next level of how we show up in the community is one of the reasons I stay.
Just to build on that, I was going to add, I think it's about challenging the status quo. Right. I mean, part of how you remove the barriers is you challenge it. And so let me be specific on that. Right. You know, one is, you know, when you're looking at your typical recruitment process, it's asking questions like, well, wait a minute, why, what is this assessment actually really doing? And is it inequitably, you know, locking out a number of individuals who, you know, who maybe shouldn't be? Like, what are we doing in that assessment process? It could be looking at, do we really need that college degree? Or is that just something that feels like that was important? You know, asking that question as Monica talked about on the Discover and Blue Cross piece. And if you don't mind teeing up and showing the slide of Discover, that was Discover, you know, showing their location. Somebody can pull that up. That was actually Discover saying to themselves, like, we want to do this different. And they will tell you, you know, when they announced here in Chatham, you know, we were part of that process with them, you know, we were in a confidential process with them for a year. We were able to connect them with Nico, which was incredible to connect them to do that. But when they were looking, you know, one of the things they shared is that the site selection process would not have led them to any urban neighborhood. Frankly, you know, that the real estate selection process is going to take them out to a suburban area. But the reality is, when you look at where the talent is, it's actually in the neighborhoods. And we actually, you know, did some analysis for them and showed how far away the closest call centers were and the amount of transportation issues that were occurring and how they could actually locate there. Discover did that. And so again, it was challenging that status quo. I think the other thing, just using another example, because I think examples are real, is I also want to pull up JPMorgan Chase. You may recall, you know, about a year ago, they had this, you know, this whole initiative, the Second Chance program. And, you know, Jamie Dimon, their CEO, you can take the slides down. But Jamie Dimon, the CEO, actually had talked about how it was important to challenge the status quo and actually look at the federal regulations that were, disallowing individuals who had some type of background. And so JP Morgan Chase went in hard, created a pilot program here in Chicago that we and Safer and Kara were a part of. And actually then he actually put his team on challenging at the federal level the regulations that said they couldn't hire individuals who had backgrounds. We've been a part of that pilot project. I'm not going to get ahead of what those results are, except to tell you that they're very encouraging. And that, you know, it's that type of leadership that's making the difference. And I think everybody has that ability to do that at their company and in their roles as executives.
All right. Anybody else? Any other comments? Okay, let's move on. This comes from Peggy Miller. What are some effective techniques to embrace generational cultural differences in the workplace?
You know, for us, you know, we have what many organizations have. You know, we call them business resource groups, employee resource groups, affinity groups. They go by a number of different names. We have one here at Blue Cross Blue Shield that is for multi-generational business resource groups. And so, you know, that's just one solution, right? We use that no matter what generation you are, coming together on, you know, and in service to the organization. For one, you know, connecting, right, as fellow coworkers and colleagues, to understand kind of what that working dynamic is. And then, you know, the second goal is to getting that collective diversity in generation, in experience and experience, as people and as professionals, and how that collective mindset can come together to be in service of the organization. But I think, you know, when we're talking about different generations in the workforce, I think you have to understand it, you have to acknowledge it, and you have to find, and you have to make sure that others understand that there are different dynamics and how people come together and working with teams and how people come together in, you know, both vertical and horizontal working relationships, and create space for that dialogue to happen, and create space that so that people can understand those dynamics and what makes people most successful in teaming together and working together. But for us, like I said, I think leveraging our business resource groups to help with that has been very beneficial.
Anyone else? Okay. What can businesses do? And you touched on this a little bit earlier, but let's focus on it for a minute. What can businesses do to be an employer of choice for those seeking jobs?
Well,
go ahead,
I think
Tina.
It's important that the businesses, let me just say, in my community, we have small businesses, and we've been working with them to be businesses of choice to our clientele. But, you know, we tell them you've got to provide a living wage. Right now, it's hard to get people to come back to work. They aren't making living wages when they were working. And with the unemployment, the stimulus, they're kind of comfortable right now. But that's, you know, that's going to go away soon. So we're working with companies in our areas, you know, to at least increase their living wage, look at better benefits, sort of change the way they look at reentry. People, because they, you know, the backgrounds there, some of the backgrounds are just really drug backgrounds. Come on, you can change your policies to let these people go back to work. So I think for me, those are the important things.
Yeah, I would agree with Tina, just to quickly add on to there. It really goes back, Anne-Marie, to your question around the reducing barriers, right? Taking a hard look at what those barriers are, those barriers for entry, and showing that those barriers have been addressed and mitigated. When we're talking about looking at hiring and promotion practices, right, that's really internal, but what happens even prior to getting internal, looking at job descriptions, right, reviewing those descriptions for relevancy of required experiences and credentials, and saying where can we change, where can things loosen, not to say you're devaluing the job, but, you know, people bring different experiences to them that, you know, maybe not don't fit in the traditional job structure in architecture. So really understanding where those opportunities to look systemically within, recruiting and hiring practices to see where you can eliminate those barriers. And once you do that, and when people say, hey, this, you know, company X is taking a more dynamic approach to how they source talent and bring on talent and advance talent when that's in, word of mouth gets out pretty quickly, right? So I think, that's one of those ways it really directly dovetails to the discussion around barriers.
If you don't mind, I just want to add, one piece on this. So I think we've talked about on this, in this panel today, one, we've talked about locate in the neighborhoods, right? And you don't have to have 1,000 employees, right? You can also have 100 employees or 50 employees, right? We actually at Skills have a program, a neighborhood consulting services program, where we're talking to employers confidentially and actually trying to group employers who actually have smaller numbers of employees but want to go into the neighborhood. So, that's one way, locate. Second, we've talked about is hiring, which I think we've already covered. Third, I would say, though, is innovate. Be creative, partner, take some risks, right? 3 years ago, we launched a youth set of career pathway programs with employers. And I'll tell you, the first year was hard because we were creating these like 2-year pathway programs with city colleges, with Chicago Urban League, with, Walgreens, and Rush University and other companies to really look at, bringing folks along the path along a 2-year period. And you have to innovate to actually create solutions. So take a risk and try something new and fail fast. And then move forward. And then the final thing I would say is just engage with the community. And I love what, Monika said, and we've talked to our employers as well, is you want to be invited in. And so you want to engage with the community organizations that are there.
All right. This comes from Takesha King, Walden University. There's also a couple of other similar questions, so I'm melding them. How can we end systemic racism in the workplace, which limits opportunities and advancement, including for highly educated professionals?
So, City Club of Chicago, I think we need a whole session on that question. It's an excellent question. And I think, it's going to sound cliche, but it's very true. It starts at the top. It starts with leaders, your senior most leaders, their commitment to understanding, one, first acknowledging where those opportunities exist for systemic racism, understanding, listening, go back to listening to the workforce, right? Employees should have space to be able to share those concerns. And when those concerns are raised and shared, that they're listened to, that they're acknowledged, that they're acted upon and that things are mitigated. But again, I can't say it enough. It really does start from the top. Leadership sets the tone for the organization. And then from there, it's again, being open and transparent about what your practices are. And it's holding, leaders and others accountable. For us, we have a strong commitment, to diversity, equity, and inclusion. In addition to, my job, as you heard, when Amory gave my title, which includes workforce talent and business engagement, I also serve as the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer here for the organization. So this is very much a part of my day-to-day. And one of the things that we rolled out last year were we directly tied our bonus dollars for our leaders, meaning vice presidents and above, to our efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So we've got, 9 goals in total that those leaders are accountable for, that's just focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's not, it's very substantive things that these leaders, that we're holding these leaders accountable for on a continued basis. And so that was, endorsed by not only our president and CEO, but our board of directors, right? So it's if you don't make it one as something that people can be measured against, held accountable for, and something that's backed at the most senior levels in the organization, that's when it gets out of control, right? That's when it goes unchecked, right? And so it's about holding people accountable. It's about sharing both internally and externally that this means something. And again, it's not because you're doing it because it's on trend. You're doing it because you recognize that it's what's best for business, it's what's best for your employees, it's what's best for the community at large. And to echo Marie, it's a moral imperative, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. All right. We have one more question, and then we're going to segue into some final thoughts from each of you that you want to make sure our audience takes away. First, we have Sonia Hunter. How can the average person assist in your initiatives? It's a good one.
Well, I'm sure. Tina, did you want to go first, or do you?
Yeah.
Wait, you go first.
Well, you know, we're a small community-based organization in the Rose and Pullman area. So we're always looking for volunteers. We sponsor various events throughout the years where we're looking for volunteers. We do clothing drives throughout the year. So our participants have clothing when they go on interview or go seeking jobs. So we're always open to contributions. They can be cash or, you know, material contributions. So if you go to our website, Phalanx Group Services, you'll find our information, and we'd be glad to, talk to you more about what you can do for Phalanx and how we can incorporate maybe some of the skills or talents that you have as a part of Phalanx.
Thanks. I would add from the skills side, skills, we put about 1,200 unemployed and underemployed individuals into jobs every year, just in Chicago, with about anywhere each year from 35 to 50 companies. And so in terms of, I appreciate this question in terms of what the average person can do. So first is, I would say, refer folks to us. If you know people that are unemployed or underemployed and are having difficulty, please send them to our website. Our job seeker website is scfjobs.com. And so send them there. If you are interested in, certainly in donating, just as Tina's saying, we all rely on, private fundraising, you're interested in donating, you can go to our website, skillsforchicagolandsfuture.com. And certainly there's a donate page there. If you have yourself or your neighbor, as a company that is interested in hiring, you can also go to our website and our business development team will get in touch. And then finally, in terms of, volunteer opportunities, I would say, certainly let us know as well. You can contact us there. But I would also share that Tina and I are also part of what's called the CBO Collective, which is 15 workforce development organizations across the city. And so I would also say you can always come to either of us, and we can also help make introductions to the broader not-for-profit community. If there's an organization that's a particular fit, we're just happy to see great volunteers in Chicago get connected.
Great. All right, we're going to wrap up. We'd like to hear from each of you for about a minute. Certainly, this has been a very robust and interesting conversation. I think we all learned something today. And I'd like you to, as you make your final comments, if you could just recap a little bit about the roadmap for other companies. I take away, as a listener today, the importance of a comprehensive approach and the importance of community partners and building momentum over time. So again, roadmap for other companies and anything else you would like to leave our audience with today. Let's start with Monika.
Yes, thank you, Anne-Marie. So again, thank you to the City Club of Chicago for this invitation. I've really enjoyed this and sharing the stage here with Marie and Tina. Thank you both. I would say in terms of the roadmap, right? It's about, as you're thinking, as organizations are thinking about this, as corporate organizations are thinking about this, what's the destination, right? What's the purpose? What are the outcomes that they're trying to drive? And most importantly, in order to truly help advance economic opportunity in the community, you have to build for sustainability. And what I mean by build for sustainability is that, it has to be agnostic to leaders, right? Leaders will come and go. As I mentioned, this is the brainchild of our president, CEO Maurice Smith. But if Maurice is not in his, if Maurice, goes and does something else, right, and someone else steps in, Morgan Park, Blue Door Neighborhood Center should not go away, right? It has to be embedded in the DNA of the organization, embedded in our culture, and embedded in terms of what truly is what's best for the community and creating that economic impact for the community. So build for sustainability. And one last point that I want to talk about, which was really that helped to kind of be kind of our North Star, if you will, you know, through what we do and how we are investing in the community, is you hear experts talk about this notion of the last mile, right? And that last mile, it means that it's difficult for those in underserved populations to get that last mile or two to, you know, from the train or the bus station into the workplace, right? So as you think about what you can do, posting jobs and creating jobs and is great in terms of, you know, generating open requisitions for jobs. But if you're in, if you're saying, even if you go out to the community recruit, but if you still have a problem where you've got, you know, significant portions of that community that haven't, that still are facing a barrier because they cannot get that one, make commute that last mile or two from the train or the bus, then that's a gap that you have to solve for, right? So I think that's what I'll leave with. It's, you know, as organizations are thinking about, you know, investing in being, locating in neighborhoods, communities, you know, take that notion of last mile with you and what you can be doing in a meaningful way. Even if it's not putting a physical center in a community, are you creating shuttle services, things like that, other ways to make that connection and go that next step in order to make sure that you're connecting people with opportunity.
All right, closing comments, Marie.
Yeah, I think, you know, one, just in terms of the recap, I think I talked a lot about challenging the status quo. And so I would encourage, you know, whatever level you are in an organization to challenge that, whether it be assessments or whether it be, you know, degrees or frankly, you know, where you're going to locate a physical presence. Number two, I'd say is partner with experts. So, you know, if company's doing a strategic plan, they're going to partner with the big consulting firms. If you want to hire from the neighborhoods, you should be partnering with organizations that's what we do. That's what we do on a daily basis. And so find those experts. Just as a, you know, example, Blue Cross Blue Shields, their very first, class at, you know, the Morgan Park facility, 50% of the placements came through skills. And so, you know, they partnered in that respect and other organizations. So partner with experts. Third, I would say for companies that are really interested, I would highly recommend that they join the corporate coalition. The corporate coalition is, you know, truly a bunch of companies that have come together to really focus on what they can do to really impact, South and West Side neighborhoods. I think that'd be a great piece to join. And then fourth, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't say hire. Be intentional, set metrics, set goals, work with organizations that are going to help you to hire from the neighborhoods, and hire those that are unemployed or underemployed, because that is actually going to, you know, that's actually going to change the world versus just stealing from other companies.
Thank you. And Tina?
I just wanted to thank City Club for this opportunity, and I enjoyed being on the panel with Monika and Marie. And I just want to say to businesses, you know, we want them welcome them to come to Pullman and Roseland, and really check us out, check Felix out. We have some other agencies here that would love to work with companies. We have some great people that live in our community. So we really want to take this opportunity to have businesses reach out to us.
All right. Thank you very much to our panelists today. It's been a great pleasure to host. Again, Marie Trupik-Lynch, Monika Turnbull, and Tina Sanders. We do have something for you as a token of our thanks, which is the highly desirable and sought-after City Club mug. And you will also receive a one-year complimentary membership in City Club of Chicago. Before we go, let me just say again, please go to cityclub-chicago.org to join, to donate, to find out more about our programming and what's coming up next. And again, thank you very much. We are adjourned.